Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush, Mini Crush Edition. Chuck here in the studio, Pond City Market, Atlanta. Noel to my left.
Chuck, I've missed you.
I know, man. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. A proper minute, because we did a batch of these.
Yeah.
And then we didn't do any for a while, and then I couldn't do the last one.
I know. That's
like
very sad.
Like a jerk.
You were out of town.
I was out of town. It was a worthwhile trip. I saw a cool movie I'll mention later.
Oh, well, stick around for that, everybody. So welcome, everyone. Thanks for chiming in with your social media answers and questions and posts and things. We'll get to those in a minute. But the show has been going great. I feel like we're on a bit of a roll with the guest booking, which is a very soothing feeling, because that's the hardest part of this job, booking guests, getting people to say yes and then to show up are two different things. And it's tough. And, you know, I'm trying to get more diverse guests in here, so it's not just Chuck and his pals. And that's kind of been happening lately. So we had a Emmy winner in Tony Shalhoub. We've had a Tony winner in coming this summer. I'm going to wait on that one. But David Diggs of Hamilton, everybody, was in our building.
That's pretty exciting.
It's super exciting.
Our buddy Mangesh made a social media post about it where he clearly had a bit of a fanboy moment looking through the window.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't see that. So that was great. David was awesome. And his movie Blindspotting that he made with his partner in crime, Rafael Casal, is coming out this summer. So we're going to sit on that one and try and time it with their movie release, because I need these little PR opportunities to come along, and that always helps. I had a Grammy winner that'll be coming soon. Loudon Wainwright III went and interviewed him in his green room before his performance. So now all I need is an Oscar winner, everybody.
Is that the EGOT? Then you'll have the EGOT.
Is that what that's called?
If you win the Oscar, the Emmy. No. The
Emmy. Grammy.
Grammy. Oscar. Tony. That's the EGOT. I think Whoopi has one. Whoopi's got the EGOT.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the guy from who wrote Frozen and Avenue Q, the Lopez's, one of the Lopez's has the EGOT.
Why do I think that Rita Moreno has the EGOT?
I don't know. Maybe she does.
All right. We'll look that up. I didn't know Whoopi did. Good for her. So the guests are rolling in. Things are going great. Trying to, you know, it's going to vary a little bit here and there. I decided I can't be so rigid with the format when these PR ops come through. For instance, the Broken Lizard episode that you just heard had all the guys in here, which was so much fun. But, you know, sometimes I got to mix it up. And, like, sometimes I forget. I forgot to ask David Diggs and Raphael their five questions at the end.
Yeah. Sometimes these people come in and they don't even know what they're doing, right? They're like
absolutely
ushered into the room and you kind of got to give them the rundown in the elevator.
Yeah. So I'm trying to just roll with it. And in David's episode, we end up talking more about the movie that they made than their movie picks per se. But I'm just trying to roll with it, everybody. So hang in there. I totally forgot Loudon Wainwright to do the Ebert section, but I did ask him the five questions. So I'm doing the best I can.
Rita Moreno, totally an EGOT winner, by the way.
All right. Real time, looking it up with Noel.
Mel Brooks also has it. Audrey Hepburn.
Really?
Yeah. Helen Hayes. Richard Rodgers of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Hepburn, huh?
Audrey Hepburn, yeah.
She won a Grammy?
I guess so.
Sometimes those people sneak in like a spoken word
an record. Audiobook or something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So we're going to kick it off this week with social studies.
Social Studies on Movie Crush.
Put out the call this morning, kind of last minute for, I believe this one was, we'll go with favorite documentary film for this one. And I am going to read through a bunch of your answers. And I try to bounce around, so just because you didn't see it first, it's firsties, then you won't get ignored. So rest assured that if you are low on the list, I will try and get to you. Christopher A. Bell, he is firsties. King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. That's a great, great pick.
You heard there's an update to that.
Wait.
Yeah.
He just got like banned or something.
Yeah, he got
right?
banned. Billy Mitchell, who's kind of the douchebag antagonist in that movie, you know, triumphs over the underdog who everyone likes. He got accused of cheating at Kong using emulation software, which you can change the frame rate of it to make it slower, or you can actually capture video more easily to
You're
kind
kidding.
Of fake time.
What
yeah.
a loser.
Well, but now he's saying that he's got proof that he didn't cheat. But if you've seen the movie, he is such a braggadocious hot sauce company impresario piece of trash. Not a fan of Billy Mitchell.
Well, if he's cheating at Donkey Kong, then he's, you know, he's a loser. John Millsap, HBO's Going Clear. Totally agree. Great, great, great. Joshua Brennan, It Might Get Loud. That was really good. Did you see that?
I don't know that one. What's that about?
That was the one with Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White.
That's right. Talking about playing the guitar.
Yeah, and that one was fun. I remember thinking, though, I wanted more of them in the room together because they did all the backstories of each one of them, which was great. But once you get those three guys in the room, it was kind of felt like the third act, and I wanted more of that. And he also mentions Beware of Mr. Baker, that awesome documentary on the drummer Ginger Baker.
That's right. I haven't seen that one. I always see it pop up in my suggested
Boy,
picks.
Yeah,
Netflix.
They know you, Noel. Jacob Thompson, Exit Through the Gift Shop, of course.
So good.
Classic.
So it's so meta, too. Like, it's almost not, it blurs the line between documentary and kind of fiction. I love it so much.
Yeah. Kelly Shank, I Am Not Your Negro. I really wanted to see that when it was out, but I did not get to. But that is on the list for sure. That's supposed to be really, really good.
Heard amazing things. I've not seen it either.
Trent Moore, When We Were Kings. Man, even if you don't like boxing, When We Were Kings is one of the great documentaries of all time. Let me see here. Ooh, Sam Lucian Palowski, The Act of Killing. Did you see that one?
That's another kind of blur in the lines one.
Yeah.
Where he makes the war criminals reenact their crimes.
Powerful movie.
Like they're doing a film scene, kind of. I have not seen it. I've just...
Oh, man.
I've read so good.
Yeah. I always watch documentaries. I love them. But I went through a phase a few years ago where I really tried to kind of tick off all the biggies on the box. Don Lozano, Searching for Sugar Man. Another great one. Have you seen that one, Noel?
Nope. Heard about it, too. I haven't been watching enough docs in the last handful
of
years.
I'm starting to gather that.
Yeah.
And those are all music docs. Like, those are right up your alley, man.
Yeah.
You would love Sugar Man. That's a good one. Jason Alvey, Man on Wire. Totally agree. Great, great documentary.
Have seen that one.
Bad movie. Okay. You want to speak to it?
No, it's just great. I mean, it's just, yeah. But I heard the movie was awful with Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing What's the guy's name? I can't even remember his name. He does the tightrope walk between the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
So it also kind of became this powerful symbol
after
9/11 happened. But yeah, really, just the guy's like such a quirky, mavericky, like he's going to do what he's going to do kind of character, which I love. And it also plays like a heist movie, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure.
They got to like break in and get up
there.
It's
not as easy as walking the wire. Like, you got to get that shit set up and not get caught. Very cool. Weston Holston, The Kid Stays in the Picture. Probably top five for me. Brett Giles, Sound City. Did you see that one, Noel? About the Sound City studio?
Is that with Dave Grohl?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that either. No.
Yeah, I definitely have suffered from Dave Grohl overkill, but that is a great documentary. Very much worth supporting. Jill sort of Vinden says all of Ken Burns' work. Fair enough. Ken Burns is he does what he does well. I'll say that.
He's got that effect, the Ken Burns effect.
Yeah, man.
Which is the slow zoom on the archival photos.
Yeah, and it was sort of I know they're documentaries, but just pre-podcast world, it was where you could really go and take such a deep dive and learn about things.
They're like 6 hours a piece, right? They're multi-part.
Well, it depends,
Yeah.
The jazz one is jazz and baseball and Lewis and Clark are the top three for me, and I just started Vietnam.
Vietnam's pretty – the music is really cool. Trent Reznor did the music for Vietnam or a lot of
– Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. That doesn't surprise me. Let me see here. Nathaniel Gibby Schuff says the new Judd Apatow documentary, May It Last, a portrait of the Avett brothers. I've seen that one too. Really good. It made me kind of get into the Avett brothers again, and I will be going to see them at Red Rocks, Colorado.
Oh, nice.
That's a bucket list venue. So I had our Denver Stuff You Should Know show planned around. Well, I asked, could it be placed near enough to a show that I might want to go to?
That's awesome, man.
And my booking agent, Josh Lindgren, said, well, the Avett brothers are there. How about that? And I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's funny. They used to play there. Before they got famous, they played a lot in my hometown of Augusta, Georgia, at a very small place called Stillwater Tap Room.
Yeah.
And it was just like tiny little bluegrass place. And they would play there. And they got kind of beloved locally and had a real good reputation because they were nice guys.
Yeah.
And then they started like going up, 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 up. And then they came back and would play the big venue. Then they played the slightly bigger venue.
Oh,
and
yeah, man. They're arenas now.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And they've got like Rick Rubin producing their records and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the documentary's good too because they are good guys. And through all the success, what really still hits home is that there's still the things they care about most are family.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
Yep.
Sarah Strand says, "Dear Zachary, ugh, what a movie. Pass the Tissues. One of the most hardcore documentaries I've ever seen, as far as just raw emotion spilling out of my guts."
Ooh, that's visceral, Chuck.
It's really, really tough, man. A bunch of people, Jeremy Kane, my buddy out in Washington, said American Movie. That's on the list.
Like, Colvin.
20 times.
Colvin, right? They're making the movie Colvin?
Yeah, Colvin.
It's so good. That's so good. I couldn't believe that it was real. It's like,
I know. It seems like it could have easily been a Christopher Guest thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's so, so fun. But sad and poignant. Like, it's a wonderful, wonderful film.
It is great. A few more here. Jane Longshore says Hoop Dreams and When We Were Kings. And she says, and I'm really not even a sports person. So Hoop Dreams, classic, really wonderful, wonderful film. And then well, let's go with one more. How about this from Janet James Allman, Dogtown and Z-Boys or Riding Giants? Two of her favorite documentaries of all time. Both great, great movies. Dogtown and Z-Boys, man, I can watch that thing 100 times.
It's the skater movie, right?
Yeah, dude. Good stuff. And Riding Giants is about the surf culture and the big the people who surf those monster waves all over the world. All right. Social studies. That's in the bag.
Good one.
All right, Noel, we're going to premiere a new segment right now that you don't even know about.
Whew.
Called Trope Time.
Yes. I love it already.
So we're going to go 5 at a time here over the course of however many weeks and months until we cover every movie trope ever. And feel free to send these in on Facebook, by the way. So we're going to start with number 1, the banker's box after you get fired.
Oh, yeah, where they present you with the banker's box and you put all your shit in there.
Every movie, every time somebody gets fired, invariably they walk out with, it's always a banker's box.
That's right.
It's got those little handles.
And then the lid, but the lid never fits on it because there's always like a fucking bowling trophy coming up outside, you know?
Absolutely. There's never a lid because of the bowling trophy. Oh, you nailed it, Noel.
That's genius, though, man. I never even thought of that as being a trope until now, but it is.
Yep, always.
Yeah.
It's like they should just call them you got fired in a movie box.
Yep.
Because they aren't even banker's boxes anymore. All right, well, here's another one. Speaking of things sticking out, the grocery bag in every movie has two things invariably that you see sticking out of the top. What's one of them?
Like a bottle of wine? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know this one, Chuck.
The baguette.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my second
The
choice.
Loaf of French bread.
Yes.
Or some sort of leafy green. And I think it's because in the art department, like you want to see, you can't just walk with a grocery bag.
Yeah.
You want to see the director, like, we have something spilling out, you know.
Yeah.
We want to see it.
Yeah.
And a big leafy green looks great, and it's always a baguette.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become such a trope that in the movie Michael Clayton, movie I talk about all the time, there is a scene with the great actor Tom Wilkinson carrying a bag full of baguettes. There's like 15 baguettes. And that's
a baguette bag.
Yeah, that's all that's in there, and it was clearly a little tongue-in-cheek move to kind of make fun of that trope, which was great.
And his character in the movie was a little unhinged too, right? So maybe that was sort of part
Wilkinson,
of his.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. That's just, he's a manifestation, the kind of guy, you know?
He's the kind of guy that would buy 15 baguettes.
You know, apparently the hamburger is more popular than the baguette now in France. Sad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I saw an article, but I don't know if it's true.
It sounds like one of those polls that I don't believe.
Well, there's the brie and ham sandwich that's very popular, and apparently there are as many burger joints now as there are places that sell those.
Oh, like the croque monsieur?
It's called something else. It's called like a jambon de Paris or something.
Okay.
It's like a half a baguette with cheese and like pickles and the special kind of ham. It's a very popular sandwich, but they used to kind of thumb their noses at burgers, and now it's becoming more of a cultural like thing. They've kind of made it their own.
Of course,
you know?
It is, because we do it right, Frenchies.
Whoa, shots fired.
All right, here's one. The bulletproof vest reveal in many, many movies over the years, maybe most famously in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Of course, when Doc Brown reveals he's on the ground. And that's how it always goes is, oh, my God, they've been killed. And then you go over to them, their eyes open, and they pull their shirt apart to reveal the bulletproof vest.
And another a variation on that is the personal metal object that was given to them some point throughout
that stops the bullet,
like the can of Altoids or something.
Oh man, those
that
are
has
great.
Some sort of sentimental value, and that's what stops the bullet.
Yeah, and I'm always like, I don't think a bullet would really be stopped by Altoids.
It's probably from an old musket, an old, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly. And then Fistful of Dollars, got to shout that out for a very early version of the bulletproof vest reveal. Clint Eastwood pulls up his poncho, and he has like a big iron plate because it's an all Western, and that was the Kevlar of the day, I guess. Mm-hmm. So that was a good early use.
It's a good one, man.
Two more here.
I like this segment, by the way.
Do you like this?
This
trope
fun.
Time?
Yeah.
All right, two more. The one arm pull up from the bridge or the cliff's edge or whatever, it doesn't matter how big the person hanging is, how weak the person pulling is, somehow they defy physics in every movie and manage to pull somebody up onto a safe ground with just one arm.
That's right. And there's also it's a very clutch moment, too, because you see them gripping hands, you know?
Yeah, and it's just, there's just no way.
There's no way.
There's no way.
No.
You can't do it.
No. I can't even do a two-arm pull-up.
I think, no way. And, I mean, God forbid somebody try to pull one of us up. I mean, we're screwed.
Dude, no. We'll take them down with us.
Yeah.
We're tumbling into the abyss.
I think that was, this is the end, that comedy. I think they played with that trope.
Oh, yeah.
With, in the scene where the earth opened up, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a fun movie.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it. And then finally, trope time for this week, the dead batteries in the flashlight. If you're in a horror movie and you're walking around with a flashlight, at some point, that thing's going to flicker on and off.
Yeah, just give it a shake.
You give it a shake. You hit it with your hand a couple of times, and it usually will light back up right to, like, a, you know, something awful.
Yes, yeah, some sort of beastie standing behind you, or a, you know, knife-wielding psychopath or something.
I love it, man. I love movie tropes. They're fun to make fun of, but they're there for a reason, and they're time-tested. They're tried and true, and that's why we see them all the time.
And it's also fun with like what you're talking about with the end of the world movie. It is fun when you start seeing them played with and people's expectations kind of fucked with a little bit.
Absolutely.
That can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So we're going to save. Oh, man, I can't wait to do more movie tropes in the future. Segment three. I'm going to do Stream This Week. And, buddy, have you watched Wild Wild Country yet?
As you know, I do a conspiracy podcast as well, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And Matt Frederick watched it and said it blew his mind.
Uh-huh.
And I have not seen it yet, but I'm very looking forward
to it. Oh, daddy. All right, so this is on Netflix, everybody. It's a six-part documentary series. I'm not going to give anything away. But it is made by McLean and Chapman Way. I believe they're brothers. Produced by two more brothers, by the Duplass brothers, executive producer. And it is the story of Rajneesh Puram, which is to say the followers of the Indian guru Bhagwan Rajneesh, also known as Osho. The followers were known as sannyasins, and they set up shop in Oregon, and kind of formed their own. They bought a bunch of land, and I'm not going to give too much away here. I'm going to keep it very light because the less you know, the better. But they bought a bunch of land in rural Oregon, and basically made their own uber commune, like a small community, which formed a bigger community called Rajneesh Puram. And it's the story of that. And this Indian guru, Bhagwan Rajneesh, and his top sergeant, personal secretary, Ma Anand Sheela. Some people call them a cult. Some people called it a new religion. Some people said that they were neither, and it was just a group of people interested in establishing a new way of life. And I got to say, while they're describing what their goal is, Emily and I are watching this thinking, this sounds great. They're like organic farming, and they help one another, and they're kind to one another. And it's sort of a rejection of capitalism and just starting a new society. And it was that period in time. It was in the early 80s where I think people were had been disillusioned by the 60s and 70s, and they were looking for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells that story. And it is bananas where the story goes.
It's twisty, right? Like, I mean,
it's not even twisty so much as it builds.
Yeah.
And it's just bananas. Okay. And that's all I'm going to say.
I like it.
It is absolutely off the charts, bonkers how far this story goes and how crazy shit gets.
Some of these Netflix multi-part documentaries are insane. Like, there was that one, The Keepers, about the nuns.
Yeah, that was tough.
That one was really intense. But yeah. Like, I'm like, where do they find these stories? This is wild.
Yeah, and I can't believe, I mean, this one was, I can't believe this is the first time it had been done to this extent. I was really surprised that this, we're just now seeing a deep dive documentary on Rajneesh Piram.
You had heard of this guy before and all of this?
Well, I hadn't, but as I was seeing the dude, it started to come back to where, like, wait a minute, I was like 11 or 12, and that face looked familiar to me, and I think I remember seeing it splash across the evening news occasionally.
Got it.
But, you know, I was a kid, so I wasn't, like, digesting Sam Donaldson on a regular basis. All right, and we're going to finish up this week with Comment Card. Five questions from you, from Facebook, to us. Kendall Argast Watson says, what true story needs to be made into a movie? And I'm going to just go ahead and say Wild Wild Country. Somebody should make a 2.5 to 3 hour movie on this.
Yeah.
That would be my call.
Cool.
Don't screw it up.
No, you can't. Well, it's like, you know, we were talking earlier about Man on Wire. How they took that amazing documentary and made a really shitty movie out of it.
Yeah.
It's like when a documentary does such a good job and it's so compelling.
Just leave it. Yeah.
Leave it.
I agree. Yeah. I totally agree. Do you have a true story that you can think of, Noel?
Well, can we go through some of the list items? And I need to think about it for a second.
All right. Gary M. Stange says, what are your favorite movies based on TV series? I've written down a few here. Twilight Zone, the movie, when I was a kid. Mm. Loved that movie. Still holds up, I think. The Mission Impossible series, generally, I love almost all of it. I think there was one of them I didn't love. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the John Woo one, which surprised me because I love John Woo.
Yeah, there's so many of them. I kind of lost track.
I can't remember which one he did. But I'm a sucker for those, man.
They're fun.
I like those movies.
They're fun, yeah. Would you say that typically when you think of a movie being made from a TV series that the expectations are kind of low?
Well, it depends, because for something like a Mission Impossible, I had pretty high expectations. And I even like that first one that Brian De Palma did. But with the comedies, I feel like a lot of times what they try and do is just make fun of it.
Right. That's sort of the new way,
kind of,
especially with like the 21 Jump Street and things like that.
Which was actually pretty good.
I've heard that was fun. Yeah,
it was a pretty fun movie.
But like, you know, things like Matthew Broderick and Inspector Gadget. That's a cartoon. That's different. But it was a TV show.
No, that counts.
Or like Get Smart, you know, things like that.
Yeah, which unfortunately that was not a very good movie.
I guess I just feel like a lot of these things, a 30-minute show is one thing. And then you're stretching that out into an hour and a half movie.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes it's, you're having to reach a little bit. I don't know.
I agree. And I'm also a sucker for that first Brady Bunch movie, I gotta say. I really thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. That was the first kind of, that was a fun meta way of handling that, too.
It was
kind
of the first one that I remember, and it nailed the casting, and it nailed the tone. Everything about it was just kind of fun and perfect for me. Really good one.
For sure.
Owen Terwilliger, great name. If you could sit down for a drink, this is such a good question. If you could sit down for a drink with any actor... or actress. We say actor on the show as gender neutral, by the way. On the set of a famous movie of theirs, who would it be? And where are you? For example, like Whiskey with John Wayne in the bar of an old Western is his example. This is such a great question. Mm. And I thought about this one and cooked up an answer that I think, even if I would have thought for hours, I may not top. So I'm going to have a drink with Bill Murray on board the Belafonte.
What's the Belafonte from?
That was the ship from Zisu, Life Aquatic.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. I want to be on that boat drinking with Bill Murray.
He was a fun character.
Yeah.
That'd be some good conversation. I'm gonna flip it and go weird with it, and I would have a whiskey with Jack Nicholson in the bar set from The Shining.
Oh, God, no. Why do you do this to me? Because now I want to be there with you guys.
You can come, dude.
Holy shit, that's a good answer. because it's creepy as hell, too.
Yeah, and he seems like an insane person, just in general.
Yeah.
It would either be really, like, terrifying and awkward or, like, really awesome. Maybe he's in a really good mood and we just kind of hit it off.
Yeah, boy, that's a good one. In the Overlook Bar with that bartender.
Yeah. What is it? What's his name?
Oh, man. I can't remember. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Never mind.
I want to say Jeeves, but yeah, I know that's not it.
That's not right.
Holy cow. Two great answers. Maybe Bill Murray and I can sail the Belafonte over to
Lloyd.
That's right. God, that's good. All right. Bennett Duckworth says, can you think of a film that floored you for defying the body of work associated with its director? Another great question. His examples are Adam McKay, the great comedy director with The Big Short, or David Lynch with The Straight Story. Really good question. I gave this some thought. Straight Story is actually a great, great choice because talk about a curveball, man. David Lynch throwing that movie out there.
I agree, but I would also argue that it is not that different from his other movies if you really pay attention.
Yeah.
Like, it is, it's so weird because it's a Disney-released film. It's a straight PG.
Yeah.
No swears, no weird nudity and drug use.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has a similar tone of, like, kind of foreboding that some of his other films have, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Okay.
I totally agree with that, though. It's a very big curveball, but when you really watch it and think about it,
yeah,
it does feel like a David Lynch movie still.
Well, and it's funny because David Lynch, when you talk to the guy, he's obviously not in person. I've never met David Lynch because I'm still alive, and I would have died if I met David Lynch.
Oh, man, me too. He's a fave.
But he's a Gosh G. Willikers kind of guy.
Oh, man.
He's very, like, he doesn't cuss and stuff. He's very pure and sort of old school.
Oh, he cusses.
Oh, he does?
Oh, yeah.
Every time I've heard him talk, he's just like, gosh darn.
One part where someone asks him in an interview, like, what do you think of people watching movies on their iPhones? And he just pauses and he goes, total fucking bullshit.
Okay. All right, I stand corrected. But his personality, though, is much of a G. Willikers kind of guy.
Kind of. Oh, yeah. I love him so much.
However, even though Straight Story's great, I'm going to go with not just a movie, but a director named Brad Anderson, who almost came on the show, but we couldn't quite get him. He started his career with a couple of kind of sweet romantic indies, Next Stop Wonderland and Happy Accidents, both really great movies. And then out of nowhere, he throws out a movie called Session 9. Did you ever see that?
Kind of thing, right?
Yeah, about this...
a mental asylum?
Yeah, an abandoned mental asylum that these people are exploring. Horrifying, scary, scary movie. And then right after that, he made The Machinist, that movie with Christian Bale where he withers away to like 80 pounds.
Right.
Very disturbing.
Yeah.
So this guy he defies all genres in that he, almost every movie he makes, he tries something else out. He did that movie Trans-Siberian, which is great. And his movie out right now is Beirut with John Hamm. So Brad Anderson's all over the place. And I really admire directors that don't go back to that same well every time.
Well, you know the director Terry Zwigoff?
Oh, he sure.
Yeah, because he kind of did that in reverse, where, like, I was first aware of him from, like, Ghost World, I think, which is amazing. Yeah. But then he also did a lot of kind of gross-out comedies, like the Bad Santa movies and stuff like that. But he made my favorite documentary of all time, Crumb.
Yeah.
About R. Crumb,
the
San Francisco psychedelic artist or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting when someone kind of, maybe they fall into a niche like they weren't expecting, and it's kind of like, all right, well, I guess these are the jobs that I'm getting offered, so this is what I do now, I guess.
Got to pay the rent.
Yeah, of course. And I don't know, I bet Zwigoff will do something interesting again.
Agreed. Janet James Allman says, if you could go back in time and suggest a major change for a movie, like an alternate ending or a casting change, what would it be? And I didn't have to think long on this one, but I'm one of the few people that really thinks the movie Gangs of New York is pretty great, save one aspect, and that is Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, because she always kind of feels like Cameron Diaz.
Exactly. She feels very modern. There's nothing turn-of-the-century New York about Cameron Diaz.
No.
And I remember at the time thinking, oh, man, that's really the one thing that took me out of that picture because I think Leo's great. John C. Reilly's great. Of course, Daniel Day-Lewis is amazing in it.
Yeah.
And I love the story of that New York back then and how crazy it was. And then Cameron Diaz trots out there like she just walked off of Venice Beach.
Right.
And it just, that's the one casting change I would make.
Doesn't Leo ever take you out of things? I always feel like he seems too young, even though I know he's not. He just always seems like a child to me.
I totally get what you mean. He does not play like middle aged
right.
well.
Ever.
Yeah, he try. I mean, he's, yeah. I think he's a good actor. Yeah,
no, he very much is. I just feel like sometimes he's such a hot shot that like he gets these roles just because of who he is that yeah. I sometimes don't necessarily think he's the most suited to play.
Maybe so.
I don't know.
Maybe so, Noel. All right, I'm going to sit on that one for a while. Dream of Leo tonight as an old man. That's it for this week. So thanks, everyone. Thank you, Noel.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just the movie I saw in New York that I missed the last
crush, right.
It's called The Death of Stalin.
Oh, yeah.
And sure. I actually posted it on the Crushers, the Movie Crushers Facebook page,
uh-huh.
Seeing what people thought. A lot of people don't seem like they've seen it yet. But
it may be limited release.
I think it maybe is, but it is.
Satire, right?
It's the guy that created Veep.
Yeah.
And it feels like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but about like this Russian coup.
Right.
And all of the actors are like these seasoned improvisers,
uh-huh.
Jeffrey Tambor
yeah.
and Steve Buscemi, and an amazing cast, but they all use their regular voices. No one tries to put on a Russian accent. But
great.
The periodness of it is through the roof.
Uh-huh.
So it's very, a little disorienting, but once you kind of like buy in to,
yeah.
to the bit,
right.
it's very rewarding.
All right. Well, former guest Ben Acker loves that movie. He said it was fantastic.
Yeah.
So those are two people I trust. You and Ben Acker.
Oh, man. You too, Chuck.
The only two people I trust in the world. All right. That's it, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Your homework for this week. Coming up this Friday, everyone. Very excited about this one. My buddy, the great actor Paul Schneider, on one of the more classic movies of all time, Back to the Future. So do your homework. You probably don't need to watch that for the first time, but watch it again is what I say. Right?
Oh, yeah. It's a great one. Holds up.
And Paul and I had a great conversation. He's a good, good dude. And look forward to that this Friday. And thanks for joining us, everyone, on Mini Crush this week. We'll see you next week.